From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a warm spring night in Rochester. A few dozen people were gathered at the scene of another recent deadly shooting. They mourned a young man killed before his life had barely begun. Some cried, they sang, they lit candles, they promised to be there for each other. But the reality going forward will be more difficult. Rochester has seen a surge in gun violence, and it has often targeted young people. Rochester School Superintendent Dr. Leslie Meyer Small tells WXXI News that 6 students have been killed in shootings this school year. Another 13 have been wounded. 8 schools have been on lockout status. This is affecting a lot of people, and the mental health impact is hard to measure. When someone loses a loved one to violence, that person is more likely to suffer depression, along with a list of other challenges, all of which brings up 2 questions related but different. How do we help people who have been traumatized by recent violence or by racial unrest, by so much of the division in our society? And also, how do we intervene effectively to help prevent future crises? A new partnership is offering mental health intervention for Black and Brown victims of both racial trauma and gun violence. Unlike many of these initiatives, this is meant to be more grassroots, led by people who are well connected to our community, people who know how to reach others who are often deemed by society to be unreachable. They're working hard on this, and they're here to explain, and let me welcome them now. Justin Morris is a community activist who's back with us. Justin, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me again, Evan. Always a pleasure.
Megan Clifford, a psychotherapist and a mental health first aid instructor. Megan, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Brandon Irons is with us. Brandon is a mental health advocate who is working with this team on the tech side of things. We'll talk about that in a moment. And Brandon lost his brother to violence last October. Brandon, thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Evan. Thanks for the opportunity.
Let me just ask Justin and Megan to kind of set the scene for us on how you ended up working together and what it was that brought you together. Megan, you want to start?
Actually, Evan, I'm going to let Justin Justin tell our story. He does it, seems to do it much
go ahead,
more
Justin.
Fluidly than I do.
Very good.
Yeah, so me and Megan initially met. She had a deck that needed to be built, and me being Mr. Fix-It, I thought I'd go over and help her with constructing and building this deck. But while that particular work was going on, she let me know that she was a therapist. And, due to the unrest surrounding Daniel Prude and George Floyd, that she really felt compelled to, offer her services pro bono to anybody that I know, would be able to utilize her services. And, being the work that I do in the community, my brain instantly went to rolling. And I told her, I may have some opportunities for her. In fact, I do have some opportunities for her. But it would be surrounding gun violence, and she was all for it. So our initial contact, I think I referred about 3 people over to her, and from that 3 people, they all called me and was like, "Yo, this is the most amazing thing that I've ever experienced." I'm expressing myself in ways that I haven't expressed myself. I really appreciate this opportunity. So that was kind of my test for Megan, to see if she was real. And to see if she was able to stand up to the challenge, because for me, I know, the demographic of people that I serve, and I know their outlook on therapy. Well, I assumed I knew their outlook on therapy and different things of that nature. So with that first 3, it just took off, and since that, I've been referring people to Megan left and right, and I mean, she has absolutely answered the call time and time. And time again. So, we've developed a level of trust. We've developed a partnership that's at this point inseparable. she has literally answered the call, every time that we've reached out and I've brought people her way.
Justin, can you give us a sense? I mean, we hear about the news reporting. We hear what the superintendent said, the number of students already lost to gun violence this year, the increase in the numbers, but people are not numbers. Can you give me a sense for what it has really been like in the community this year?
It has really been, I'm going to just be honest with you, it's been a scary time in our community. I was just telling somebody like this the other night, you know, community morale is low. Public servitude is low. There's no camaraderie at any level of government right now. And that trickles down into our communities, into our streets. When you have all of those things that's going on in the community, and you see not an uptick in violence, you don't see an uptick in violence. You see a whole 100% increase in violence in a community as small as Rochester. So the lasting effect of trauma as it relates to the individuals that live in these communities is just at a level to where we need immediate intervention. And in my civil rights work, you know, we're going as far as is probably getting ready to have to call the state police into Rochester because of the state of Rochester and how violent and volatile Rochester has become. Rochester is not a safe place.
That's before I turn to Megan, let's just talk a little bit more about that. I mean, that's not always been the Rochester that you know, and I know that that is not the future of this community as you see it. What's it going to take to change that, Justin?
And you're right, Evan. It won't be the future of what we see. That's why I think initiatives like this and being innovative in our approach to the problem and being on the preventative side of the issues in the community is vitally important. And I told Megan, I've had conversations with Brandon that, you know, this work, we're really going to have to become bulls in china shops and just cut out all of the not even entertain what's not working. We have to be totally sold on this work on the other side of it with getting individuals in this community the help that they need. You know, me and Megan coined the phrase, and we're going to continue to coin it, and Brandon's going to coin it. Hurt people hurt people. So if we can address that hurt early on in the game, we can begin to start seeing tangible change in our community.
Are you someone, Justin, who thinks that some of what we are seeing, some of the violence, is a result of people who are just disconnected, whether that's adults who can't find jobs, students who got sort of sent adrift by this pandemic, they didn't have direct contact with school, they were kind of lost it a little bit, or is it something else? I mean, how do you see the factors that are driving some of that?
We all know that economics drive, mm-hmm. You know, communities. Economics is the foundation of any community, of any society. And when you have communities and you have society who don't have equal opportunity to gainful employment, equal opportunity to skilled trades, and the development of young people coming into the workforce, and the talent pool is low, you are going to see this. Violence is a strategic, in some instance, planned situation to where, you know, in some of these communities, when you only give people a small portion of the pie and everybody is fighting over that same portion of the pie, we and our human instincts are taught to survive. So in survival mode, people commit violent acts. I mean, it is sociology, it's science, it is evidence. So when there are a lack of resources, people are going to kill, steal, and destroy to get opportunities to that little bit of resources that's available. So what people have to understand, that violence occurs in communities such as Rochester, it's all centered and anchored in resources.
Okay.
So we have to be intentional about, you know, identifying those things that you just named, but also identifying opportunities in which we can create a economic structure in Rochester that supports, you know, the constituents that live here.
Mm-hmm. And the last point on this, and then we're going to turn back to how this partnership is working and all of the work that mm-hmm. all three of you are doing on this. The last point on this is, you know, Justin, you're someone who has not been afraid to speak truth to power. And so I asked this question not at all sort of to provoke anything political. I just want to raise I want to raise the question, because listeners may be wondering, you are painting in some parts of our community a tough, bleak picture that I know that you consider to be temporary. I know you are an optimist. I know that you see a better Rochester in the future, but the current reality is very tough. We do have elections coming up, city council, there's a mayoral election. And I wonder if those are sort of apart from all of this, or do they factor in? Do people care? Are people engaged with that? Are they following it? And do you see these, you know, sort of as pertinent to what's going to happen in the future?
So years ago, when Barack Obama first ran for office, P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, whatever his name is these days, right? He came out with a campaign, and the campaign for the black community was called Vote or Die. We are literally in a vote or die scenario in our community. And if Rochester doesn't wake up, you know, you're not only going to die a physical death, you're going to die an economical death here in the city of Rochester if we don't elect new leaders in this community. I have been very vocal, as you stated, about getting new leadership. But now, more so than ever, when you look at all of the inconsistencies and failures surrounding different parts of our city and different parts of our county, we have to make sure that we get the most competent people in these seats. And we also have to realize that we have the power. A lot of people would be scared to speak out, you know, right now on this platform and talk about the issues because, you know, it might affect funding and it might do this, it might do that. No, we have to speak truth to power. Everything else will fall in line. We must be on the front lines of speaking truth to power and getting new people elected into our communities so that we can see different results. It has not worked for the last 8 years. It's not going to work no matter how hard we try to continue to strike this engine to get it to crank. It's not going to crank. We need to go in a different direction, and we need to go in a different direction starting June 22nd.
Megan Clifford, when you hear Justin describe, you know, sort of this moment where he's wondering if you would be able to engage in the way that he was hoping. And it was, it's not that he was testing you, but he was kind of wondering, like, you know, if you were serious, if you were going to follow through. And then to hear him say that you have answered the call every time, I mean, I'm sure that's gratifying, but you probably can't do this forever pro bono. I mean, is there a systemic way to scale up what you're doing? Can you talk a little bit about what it has been like for you and how you see this happening in the future?
Well, I think one of the unique points that actually came about was a very basic social work thing. I'm a social worker, clinical social worker, where Justin would refer people to me who I, you know, originally I said three people. I could take three people. And then people would come and start seeing me, and I'd say, hey, do you have insurance? Do you know if you have insurance? And they had it, and they didn't know that they could use it to see me. They, you know, were underinsured. There was just some basic lack of access or lack of knowledge about how to access in, you know, for me to get paid. So most of the people Justin ended up referring to me actually did have insurance. So what it did is I was able to, you know, absorb them into my caseload, you know, as a part of my practice. But then, you know, just keep saying to Justin, you know, keep coming. It's fine. You know, I want to serve this population, and this is, it worked out fine. I mean, that wasn't my original intention, but again, that was just kind of a thing where, like, people just didn't know that, oh, I can go to a therapist and Blue Choice Option will cover it, or, oh, I have a $20 copay, or whatever it is. And I had a couple of people that I said, oh, you don't have insurance? Here, let's go to, you know, NewYorkState.gov, and I'll show you how to get on. And they got insurance. So, like, those little nuanced things about when we talk about connections and services and all that stuff, you know, that's the reality of what happened. So in terms of my work as a psychotherapist with Justin, you know, I will continue to do that. But as we talked more and more, we saw that together as a team, we could make a bigger impact. Because one of my passions, as you know, Ben, when I've been on the show before, is talking about prevention and early intervention. Mm-hmm. Because we know how long people go. And it's an average of 11 years by the time they experience symptoms and then until they get treatment. And we know there is a big distrust with African Americans in our community with mental health providers. So I want to go back to Justin's point. You know, he's talking about the economic distress, and that people are desperate and they do things when they're, you know, fighting for their lives, right? That's where violence comes from. If you're denied the emotional safety and the physical safety and the economic safety, you know, from the time you're born and grow up with that, you're going to develop that way of existing in your mind. And that's where the trauma starts, and the trauma is reinforced and reinforced and reinforced. So with Justin and my partnership, we're naming that right off the bat. And we're saying we need to start being where people are in conversation with people who are trained to understand what mental health looks like and trained to, in a very organic way, say to somebody, hey, you know what? I'm wondering if it might be helpful to you to talk about the fact that you haven't been sleeping. You know, oh, I wonder whether, you know, you might want to talk to somebody about those nightmares you're having. And that's all very, we want it to be designed to be very organic. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the premise of our initiative, really is founded in three things. It's founded in the idea of outreach. And my vision is to have people from the community with lived experience who have grown up in the community as those outreach folks. Training, which includes our mental health first aid training that we would like to extend that reach as far as possible to teach people how to identify, understand, and respond to someone experiencing emotional distress. And then finally, connection. And it's not always connection to therapy. Sometimes it needs to be connection to something before that. You know, so I'm just the small thing about getting somebody insurance. You know, if we're doing outreach and I have a social worker or a community member and I've taught them how to access, you know, New York State Gov for insurance, that's the connection, right? That builds the connection. And then we move, you know, on baby steps forward to getting them to a place where they may want to engage in therapy. Mm-hmm. And that's also, I'm sure you're going to want to bring Brandon in. That's where Brandon's really become an amazing partner with us in terms of using technology to facilitate the connection to those services that we're wanting to provide the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a moment, I'm going to ask Brandon to sort of outline how that might happen, because it sounds to me, Justin Morris, like for now, the way you're doing this is totally grassroots, that you are identifying people who might need Megan's services, and you're sort of one by one making these connections. But I mean, that is that what's happening? And because eventually that's got to sort of be scaled up, and I'm sure Brandon will talk about that. But is that what you've been doing, Justin?
That's exactly what I've been doing. And, you know, when Leslie Myers-Smalls came out with those startling numbers that you mentioned earlier, you know, I let Megan know, like, listen, Megan, she's talking about the work that we've been doing. You know, some of those kids that she named are kids that I've referred to you, are kids that you have seen, that kids that you have talked to. And, you know, there's no way for her to ever even correlate that together. So I said, you know, Megan, it's time to come out and go public about this and scale this thing up so that, you know, this can be a normalcy in our community. So when you say grassroots, this is, for me, my expression of grassroots is this is out the mud, Evan. This is straight out the mud. Mm. And like you said, it's time for this to be supported by our community. And me and Megan have been in a ton of meetings lately, and people have been receptive. This conversation is gaining a lot of traction, and we're so thankful, and the gratitude is we're so appreciative of people starting to, you know, really, really entertain this conversation and, you know, put some funding behind it, you know. So, yeah, when you talk about grassroots, Evan, I'm going to say this is out the mud
roots. Yeah, but here's what worries me though, Justin. What worries me is that, let's say it's an 18-year-old young man who's really struggling, who's gone through a lot of trauma and loss. But my concern is that the word therapy or the words mental health will be viewed as soft. You know, not for me. You know what I mean?
Right. And so that's where that organic outreach comes in, and those people who have the relationships, because I never, ever, ever, ever start off any of my introduction conversations with therapy or what was the other word you used?
Mental health is the phrase, yeah, mental health.
Or mental health. It's always been an organic conversation, and to the point that I made earlier, you know, I thought those same things. And oftentimes, probably in 70% of my referrals, they have said, I need a therapist. I need someone to talk to. As it relates to mental health, the subject of mental health probably never comes up. You know what I mean? So it's organic conversations that lead us into the conversation surrounding getting these individuals help for what they're going through. Because, you know, in this work in homicide response and violence prevention, one of the things that I've noticed, you know, more often than not, people always want someone to talk to. They always want someone to talk to. They always want someone to listen to them. They always want someone to hear their pain. And when they're having these conversations, what I've noticed is they're reaching out for the help. They're trying to figure out what resources are available. But we have to put people in those spaces. We have to get the right people in the right spaces. I know you all have heard me say this before. We have to put the right people in the right spaces to determine better outcomes in this community. And I think that that's the work that we're committed to, identifying and pulling out of that talent pool of people to get these people connected to these services, and also get people in these rooms to be trained in mental health first aid.
Let me bring in Brandon Irons. And Brandon, I just want to start by saying to you that, you know, we are so sorry for your loss. Can you tell listeners a little bit about the family story, what happened last October?
Thank you. Thank you for your condolences. Honestly, unfortunately to say, to us, it's normal in our neighborhoods for things like this to happen. I lost a brother to some street violence. That's the best way I can sum it up. And you know, obviously, it's tragic. But I want to use this opportunity in this partnership with Megan and Justin to help someone else that could be going through this same thing that I went through and still going through. Or prevent. Obviously, we want to prevent anything like this from happening. So just to touch on what you talked about a little bit about, you know, people may think it's not tough or whatever. That's our job. That's part of our job, to put people, get some people these services that they know are tough, right? Because if you're looking at a tough person who you perceive to be tough, getting services that like this, they might be okay. So we're just going to put people in position like myself, right? I'm not like looked at like a punk or soft or anything like that, but I enjoy making services. It's helped me put a lot in perspective. So if we can get out and do this grassroots thing like Justin spoke about and make sure that we're connecting with the right people and the demographics, this will go fine.
How are you doing personally right now?
I'm doing great. It's routine. I wake up, I take my personal time for grieving. If I have a moment, if whatever I have. But I spend time with family. I live my new life. I live my new life with the missing piece. That's all I can do.
Yeah. When you think about this rise in interpersonal violence that we've seen this year, what do you think is behind that, Brandon?
I'm gonna be honest. I don't know. Before this event happened with me, I was into business and tech, and I wasn't really looking up at the world from a bird's eye view. That's why I say I use this opportunity to learn and figure out the position and what's going on now. Because honestly, I was in my own world. I wasn't really understanding the change and the shift of the younger minds and everything like that. So it's not hard to catch up. I'm just paying attention to what's going on and.
Yeah.
I'll just figure it out.
I mean, I there's no doubt it was a shock to you. Anyone who loses someone is a shock. How has it affected your own sort of personal community, that loss?
I'm going to be honest. I don't talk to a lot of people except close people right now. It's very, very fresh. So I speak with Megan. He has a lot of friends, my brother and people. I haven't really spoke with a lot of them. I want to make sure I take the proper time and everything to grieve up. So I don't know. You're talking about how we're responding to my brother in particular, right?
Yeah.
I'm not exactly 100% sure. I know I see people post things and things like that, but I got to just deal with family and building up and just using my feelings to, you know, just help people out right now.
How did you get hooked up with Justin and Megan?
Justin is a friend of mine, so I've known Justin for a while. Justin's a friend of mine, and he's actually one of the people I did speak with when things first happened. So I didn't have a problem speaking with Justin at all. We were just speaking organically. Like you said, it was he didn't make me feel away with offering it. He just let me know that there's someone that was there for him. And there was the opportunity if I did want to. No pressure or anything like that. And I was, like you said, more than willing. That's something I wanted to do. I wanted to talk to somebody with a clear mind about me, clear mind about the situation. And we don't even talk a lot about that. We just talk about me and how to deal with it and how some of the ways the brain is trying to adjust to the trauma. So I love it for the education aspect.
Justin Morris, is there anybody in this city that you don't know?
I'm starting to think that I'm trying to meet new people, Evan. If you got some people that you think I might need to know, let me know, man.
No, I mean, look, it is not a surprise that, you know, you were able to be there for Brandon and that you know, not only know him, but thought about ways to help him. But Justin, since you are so well connected to this community, let me just ask you how this is, especially the last year, has affected you. I mean, there's been a lot of loss in this community.
I think Brandon kind of alluded to it, you know, with him being a person that's been directly affected. And for him to say, you know, he's numb, you know, because of all of the factors that exist in our community. I just spoke at a funeral last week, and I try to express to people actually how numb I am to these occurrences of violence. It's not that you don't care. It's literally, and Megan has helped me with this, right? You know, there's a part of our brain that has to protect us. So what my brain has done, it's gone into extreme protective mode, which is a safe place for me because in that protective mode, when things occur, I'm immediately thinking about how can I get people connected to services. You know, I don't have the time to mourn. I don't have the time to grieve. I actually lost a first cousin to gun violence, you know, in this past year. So I don't have the time to mourn. I don't have the time. What can I do to get people connected to service? Megan got me connected to my therapist to start having, you know, in-depth conversations about my mental health and my well-being. So, you know, I think that over this past year, as I said in the beginning of the conversation, I'm scared. I'm absolutely 100% scared. But the fear that I feel, it has to be anchored in action for me, because I'm not going to sit back and allow, you know, violence to be the narrative of our community. So, you know, it's anchored in action. You know, I'm so scared to the point of, you know, we're getting ready to create this and really start to be one of the solutions to the violence that exists here in our community.
Joyce in Rochester, we're going to take your phone call after we take this only break. And what we're going to do is we'll come back, we'll take that call, and then we're going to talk to Brandon about some of the work he's doing, not just, you know, sort of in his own life dealing with loss, but looking at possible tech solutions for the work that Justin Morris, community activist, Megan Clifford, a psychotherapist and a mental health first aid instructor, are engaged in here. I mean, Justin Morris knows a lot of people in the city, but he can't personally be responsible for bringing every single person who needs mental health services, other connected services. He can't do it all. So it's a question of where you go next with this kind of outreach on the grassroots level, and we'll talk about all of that and more next. Coming up in our second hour, we welcome two more candidates for Rochester School Board, 9 candidates for 3 positions, and we're less than 3 weeks away from voting. Next hour, you'll meet Minister Clifford Florence and James Patterson, 2 of the candidates who will be on the ballot, talking about how the RCSD handled the pandemic and so many other issues related to education in our community. That's next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson and Joyce in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Joyce.
Hi. Evan, you are amazing. You offer the best programs and the best things about Rochester. I want to tell you about, oh, it's true. And these people, too, I commend for the work they're doing. I wanted to share with you and your listeners the opportunity, if anyone is interested, to become a volunteer in the Monroe County Jail. There is a program there similar to what your guests are referring to on the outside that I helped co-facilitate called Houses of Healing, A Prisoner's Guide to Inner Power and Freedom. I did not develop it, but I had implemented, and it is a superb program at helping people understand their worth, their value, and the incidents in their lives that have occurred, the trauma, the anger, the neglect, the abandonment, abuse, whatever the violence has been, to help them heal and move forward to create a different life than they have thus experienced. So again, I just commend you all. And if you're interested, there is a not-for-profit called Prison Ministry of Upstate New York, and you could check out Houses of Healing. It's a marvelous program, and I thank you all for being such great heroes in our world.
Joyce, it's very kind of you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And let me just ask Justin Morris briefly here, you know, for people who end up in the system, so to speak, right? They're incarcerated in some sense. What is the biggest challenge that you see, Justin, in a society that can make it very hard for people to sort of get a foothold in a quote unquote productive life again after incarceration, right?
Yeah, and I think Brother Damon Meeks, Assemblyman Damon Meeks, is actually working on some legislation that's going to, help people coming home who were formerly incarcerated get a little bit better traction when they get out into society to be able to help them, you know, become gainfully employed in different things like that. It's funny, I was just actually offered, referred for a position at CEO here in Rochester. And it's a position where, offenders will be returning back into society and getting them connected into becoming gainfully employed. I didn't move forward on that position because that's actually, the work that I'm getting ready to start anchoring in addition to this work is getting people connected to, getting people the opportunity to be connected, to be gainfully employed, and I'm having that talk right now at the federal level with some people in at the federal level to try to get the ball rolling on that. They have identified those issues, and they are willing to work and build bridges in our community to make sure that this work can be sustained. So, it's a tough situation, but we have one of the greatest redemption stories on this line with us, and I'm pretty sure he'll get into that. I kind of probably just put him on the spot, but he'll be able to talk about that.
Brandon, does that put you on the spot? Do you want to elaborate on that?
We could talk about it a little bit. I've been through a few things, but I went through prison and came out of there and completed parole successfully. So we got to know how a little bit on what it's like transitioning. So that's another addition I want to bring to the team.
Do you feel like you've got the opportunity that you need to move forward with your life since you went through the system, Brandon?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's one of the best things that happened to me.
Boy, that's powerful. And so now let's talk about what you might be able to do with Megan and Justin with this partnership. Tell me a little bit about the tech side of things and what you're working on.
Okay, right now, so I'm just sitting in Megan's and Justin's meetings right now, just to kind of sort out what they want to happen versus what can really happen and what we can do, and just go and identify the target and think about how we'll collect all the data we need, like you said, to transition from more of a grassroots one-on-one thing to reach a broader audience.
So, what is sort of your background on this, the tech side? I mean, you're listed in my notes as a coder, and I admit I don't even know what that means. Like, I am not savvy with that stuff. Tell me a little bit about that.
So computer coding is basically just giving a computer a set of commands. So everything needs code in the computer. It's just a box that needs everything's binary numbers. So What we do is just transition that binary into code. So what you see on your computer is actually commands from a human being just intaking information. So we just, like I said, the process is gather all the information and then we put it in the digital form. It's not as complex as most people think.
I think it is.
Me too.
Evan, I might be able to just shed a little bit of light.
Yeah, go ahead.
Justin and I having this. Justin and I have big dreams always, but we're also great with action, I think. I'm just going to say that to Justin. Thank you for your action on everything. But what we want to do with Brandon's help, and he's already been a great asset in helping us with this vision, is we want to create an app. We want to create an app right now at this level that's specified to this area, that when somebody is on an out, you know, out in the outreach position or somebody who's been trained in mental health first aid, you know, when they've made that connection, when somebody feels safe, because again, all of this is rooted in somebody feeling a safe emotional connection with whomever they're talking about. So with that organic conversation, if somebody says, yeah, you know, I really do need to talk to somebody. I don't know how to do that. I don't have insurance. You know what? I'd love to talk to somebody, man, but I got to get a job first. Whatever it is, that we're going to have an app that has those resources and services. And I take a little bit of issue sometimes with those two words, because I think that, you know, resources and services is a huge thing, right? And so what it means to me as a social worker versus a community member versus somebody else, it's very vague, right? So we would be able to use this app when we're talking to that individual and help them right there look and see how to access them. So we know, especially millennials and younger, that's the way they communicate. Another vision that I would have in addition to that is to be able, probably in our second phase, is to develop a chat feature so that we would have people who were available, who were local, you know, that could, you know, Justin or whomever is working, it would be a warm handoff to somebody like, hey, go on the app and you can, you know, get on the chat and you can just, you know, basically the person on the other end would be doing a small assessment and sort of being able to direct that person. So as you see, as we go through the whole thing, it's grounded in what Justin and I believe is fundamental, safety and connection. Just like your show, right? But it's connecting all the way through. It's not, okay, you need therapy, here's a phone number, because we know people aren't going to do that if there is a stigma or there is distrust. So having those people in the community, showing those people, because, you know, I think 98% of people have smartphones in our area. Maybe I might be a little high on that, but a good portion, especially of the population we're targeting. So we're with them. You know, so maybe we're not with them in person, but they got the app from Justin. They got the app from me. I probably won't be the outreach person, but, you know, they got it from somebody that they trust. And then they can vouch for the services, because that's why I've been successful with Justin, because he gives me credibility. He can vouch for me. And I think that's fundamentally why he and I have been successful, because we inherently trust each other. Mm-hmm. We need to build that trust with our community members. Every interaction, every baby step, every warm handoff needs to be rooted in that.
Brandon, do you think this kind of tech solution is doable?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to get it done.
Well, I mean, you know, Megan, it's interesting that maybe a decade ago when smartphones were new, we wouldn't have seen the number of people who have them. I'm talking everybody in the population, people who have struggled with socioeconomics, people who have struggled with poverty. I mean, this has become sort of a public utility, and it may be a way to reach people and provide more of an in. I think it's going to be interesting to see where it goes next. So let me go ahead and get a couple more bits of listener feedback. This is Sherry from Greece. Go ahead, Sherry.
Hi, Evan, and hello to Megan and Justin and Brandon. I wanted to offer my words of support and also a resource. We are a brand new Office of Mental Health licensed outpatient agency in the Greece area, so we're on the west side. And so as you talk about the struggles with, you know, convincing people to find a therapist, Once you get there, we're available. So as a new provider, we have openings. We have a psychiatric nurse practitioners, so we're also able to assist if medications become an issue. But you're absolutely right. Getting people to take that step, to make that phone call, it is a huge, huge undertaking. So I commend all of you for kind of beginning at the beginning, because you're right. By the time they get into therapy, sometimes half the work has already been done.
Megan, you want to add to that? What do you think?
Oh, thank you. I think I have heard of you, and I know exactly where you guys are. So,
good.
Yeah, but one thing I wanted to mention to your point. So I have people that Justin has referred to me that in a lot of ways we end up doing kind of the text back and forth thing, right? So, and that's a little non-traditional as a therapist, and that's particularly what I'm willing to do. Not everybody has that level of comfort with their boundary, but I may have a kid that I work with that, you know, he's not going to sit down and have a conversation for 50 minutes with me. You know, that's not going to be the way that it works. But this one particular kid that I've worked with, very difficult. I just check in with him every day. I send him a text once a day. How are you doing? Right. And so I'm keeping that warm connection with him because I think at some point he may be ready to talk about what he's experienced. Right. So that is difficult when you're working in a clinic setting because I can't bill for that. Right. So that has to be why some of this has to be that organic grassroots based stuff and why Justin and I are trying to be creative with our funding, because we want to be able to have the freedom to empower clinicians you don't even have to be a clinician, right? Just like Brandon said, Sherry said, most of the work done before you even get there, right? That we can be unique and we can try a different approach to connecting with people. And then hopefully when they do feel that sense of safety with me, I can say, how are you feeling? You know, you lost your brother. Is that something that you feel like you're ready to talk about? But you can't do that before.
Anything you want to add there, Sherry?
You're absolutely right that connection is slow, and putting that time into a relationship is important. So I think, however, you know, I think that can happen in lots of ways. So, and you're right, texting and phone calls and communication all make a difference.
Sherry, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for that. And Brandon, do you feel like, you know, are you someone who takes a long time to open up and really kind of go deep on stuff?
Yes, I do.
What is it that helps you decide you're ready for that? Or what is it that makes you feel like you're comfortable enough to do that?
The connection, it's the initial connection, right? Because if Justin never told me that Megan was okay, I would have probably just fed into the regular stigmas attached to therapy or whatever. So Justin says she's okay, so she's okay. So that's the same form we want to mimic with building this application and any when we come in contact with. You need to be from someone you think is okay.
Let me read a note from you want to add there? Is that Justin? Go ahead. I might have missed her. Was that Megan?
Nope.
Okay. Let me go ahead and then just read an email from a listener who's talking about, you know, what has hurt cities. Gary says, your guests have suggested that leadership has failed the urban community and we need radical change. They have addressed this problem through taking personal responsibility and not relying on government. They're doing it. But 60 years of democratic cities have destroyed the black nuclear family, left cities unsafe, and schools inept. Are the Republicans correct? What have we got to lose? That's from Gary. What do you think, Justin Morris?
You know, I think this statement is true to a certain extent. I think the statement is, you know, you make a statement and say, you know, they're doing it without government, but then you allude to a government entity to be the solution with our Republicans correct or whatever the statement was. So I think we just need to keep it, you know, in perspective of what's important. I don't care whether it's a Democrat or a Republican or a whoever the case may be. If they identify violence to be an issue and mental health to, you know, factor into violence in our community and they want to offer up the solution or they want to support the solution, I'm all for it. One of the sayings that I've given Megan since we've started doing this work is, you know, it doesn't matter if you need a lung transplant, it doesn't matter who the lung comes from, as long as you're able to breathe once that transplant surgery is performed. I know our intentions and I know the integrity that exists, you know, amongst this group and amongst the program that we're going to put out. So, you know, I'm not really, you know, digging into statements like that. I appreciate, you know, him, you know, recognizing the work that's being done and recognizing the standard in which it's being done. But yeah, I'm not feeding too much into that.
All right. So, Megan Clifford, you've talked about, you know, funding and building this operation and doing more. What's going to fund this? What's it going to take?
Well, ideally, Evan, what our vision is again to have these three different veins: the outreach, the training, and the connection. So we'll take money from whoever wants to give it. So with Gary, I want to just respond to your
point go ahead.
Of view. If a large company in the community likes our idea and wants to throw me money to do it, throw us as a team money to do it, I'll take it. If a government entity wants to, because I don't get involved in that piece of it because my eyes are on the work. I've been busting my tushy since February 3rd is when I first came out to this, and I met with Mary Lupien, who is actually very interested in the program. After the young woman was pushed into the snow and cuffed and maced, I emailed her. I said, listen, this is what my thoughts are. I did meet with other governmental officials. They all loved the idea, but nobody had money. So I was fairly discouraged. And then I was talking to Justin, and Justin's like, we can do this. We can do this. We'll find money. We'll work together. We'll get our message out and we'll find money. I would be delighted if somebody would give me money for 4 outreach workers. Okay. Money to train whoever wants to take mental health first aid. You're totally welcome to go on my website, wellnessrochester.com, and sign up for a training. Or facilitate the funding for us to develop this app. I mean, as you can hear from our conversation, we are passionate about this. This is our life's work. This is what our values are grounded in. And so it's what everybody wants. We need funding. We need funding. But we've just told you this is what we're going to do with this funding, and that is what we will do with that funding, because that's who we are.
How would you suggest right now, Megan, people who want to get in touch with you, either to sort of expand the mission, or for people who have heard this message this hour, have heard Brandon, have heard Justin, and have said, I'm somebody who needs help. I need services. How do they do that?
Well, I think if they feel comfortable hearing me on the radio and that was something that felt safe to them, that I would just welcome them to email me. And that's Megan, M-E-G-A-N, at wellnessrochester.com. And for folks who might be listening that do know Justin or Brandon, I think they'd be welcome to have you reach out to them and facilitate an introduction. And I'm also, you know, starting to talk with my colleagues and people who I know have a passion for working with gun violence victims as well, to see if they're able to open some spots on their caseload to, again, you know, we need to be vouched for through the community members. And kind of same thing, if I trust, I'll just use my friend's name, if I trust Heather Starks and Justin trusts me, then hopefully people would feel like they could trust her.
Yeah. Justin Morris, I'll give you the last minute here. What do you want to leave our listeners with as we head into the summer when, unfortunately, historically, you know, every city in the country sees, to the extent that violence moves and sort of with the weather, it does. We're moving into the summer. There's a lot of people who've been hurting for a lot of different reasons. What do you want to leave people with?
I just want to let people know that you have a group and several groups in the community that's going to be fighting to ensure a solution to, you know, the violence that we see in our community. And with this particular effort, we hope to see, you know, immediate change in our community as it relates to violence. We are going to put our best foot forward and go as hard as we can surrounding these issues in our community to make sure that we put forth a tangible result that the community can see as it relates to the violence in our community. Mm-hmm. We hope that this approach will be receptive to the community, and that's pretty much it. I'm sorry, Evan. I got fatigued. I've been talking for weeks.
Hey, man, you need a nap, my friend.
Yeah.
Justin Morris is a community activist involved in this and many other projects. Always good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us, Justin.
Likewise, Evan. Take care.
Thank you.
And Brandon Irons, good luck to you, not only with this project, but for you and the community who have gone through a lot of loss. Much love to you. Thanks for being with us, Brandon.
Love. Thanks so much.
Megan Clifford, good luck with this. We'll be in touch. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for the opportunity, Evan. Take care.
More connections coming up in a moment.